Dave Psych Lectures, part of the Thunderbird 6 podcasting network.
Okay, so, like I said, the audio won't be as good on this one because of the, I'm using the internal mic in this computer, but I don't have enough battery life left in my recorder here. Like, there's no way that's going to get through an hour. There is no way. So we'll see if this works. If not, well, I don't care. All right, so talking about stress and health today, this is one of the areas that evolutionary psychology, I wouldn't say where it started, but it's one of the first places where evolution, before there was an evolutionary psychology, where evolution really was having an influence, I think. Our behavior has pretty serious consequences health-wise. Okay? Things like smoking and other drugs clearly have big health effects, probably more than anything. Smoking cigarettes and drinking alcohol are probably the two most dangerous drugs available to humans, and they're the legal ones. I think if we started all over, we'd probably make them illegal, and we'd make heroin legal and cocaine. You know, actually, literally, the therapeutic index, the lethal dose divided by the effective dose for heroin is larger than alcohol. Alcohol, literally, dose-wise, the way you typically measure stuff, is literally more dangerous than heroin. The difference is, of course, you have to buy alcohol from the LCBO, you buy heroin from Tony Soprano or from the Hells Angels. So, I mean, you know, there's a lifestyle aspect there. So your diet also plays a role, and of course we know this, we've been told this for years. Basically, the take-home message finally at the end of this whole, of today, will be that your mom was right about everything. Right? Just don't smoke, don't do drugs, don't eat so much, and just calm down. My mom doesn't sound anything like that, by the way, like not even remotely, but, you know. So your reaction to stress is also going to be very important here. Okay? All right. So this kind of health area is studied by the sort of professionals here called health psychologists. And what health psychologists do is one of the big things they do is they talk about our reactions to stress. They talk about the effects of emotions, personality, and disease and how they interact with each other. And you can see, I think, when you look at these couple of things, how an evolutionary angle is really going to help us here. Because we have Stone Age minds living in these civilized bodies. So if that's the case, we get stressed for a reason. Right? There must be a good evolutionary reason for us to have this often unpleasant response. And then we can take a look and see what the disconnect is between today and the EEA. And if there is that disconnect, maybe that explains, and it can help us understand things like stress and emotions and how they affect behavior. And one of the other interesting questions that health psychologists ask, we talk too much about this, is when and why do people seek treatment? And why does some not seek treatment? Right? We all know people that go to the doctor for everything. You know the people that drive you crazy? They get their nose gets stuffy. Stuffy? And that's horrible when it's stuffy. When their nose gets stuffy, and they go to the emergency room. Right? Well, I gotta go to Emerge. Get some meds. By the way, I hate that. It's driving me crazy. Unless you're a doctor or a nurse. See, emergency and medicine. Meds. You think you are George Clooney? ER. ER reference. Anyway. Some people go for everything, and there's other people that like never do. And they even, I've heard people say, well, I don't really want to know. I found a lump in my arm, but I think I'll ignore it. There's people, I know people like this. And there's most of us that somewhere, you know, live somewhere in the middle. If you something looks unpleasant or seems weird, you go to the doctor, but typically you go, it'll probably, you know, most things kind of self-correct. All right. So stress and illness is probably, I think, we'll talk about this, I think, quite a bit today. The fight or flight response is what we're talking about here. Okay? So this is the idea of run away or attack, and very often run away. Right? And think about humans. We are not alpha predator. Well, we are now because we're smart enough that we don't need... Yeah, we have big teeth, no. Are we stronger than, say, other big animals? No. We have running, no. Can we design firearms? Oh, wait, yes, we can. We win. Right? So, but for the longest time, we were not there, right? It was quite possible for you to get killed if the wrong kind of beast saw you. So this system we have, the stress system we have, made a great deal of sense 100,000 years ago. Probably up to about 10,000 years ago, when people started living in towns. One of the oldest ancestors of all of us started living in towns. Stopped being hunter-gatherers. And as I've noted before, looking around, I think most of us in here probably aren't from the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers area. So for most of us, that's even more recent than 10,000 years ago. Right, so back when we looked like that guy... Yes, Google image search for a caveman. And that's what I got, the first thing I got. But it made sense then, right? Because you could die. The wrong kind. See, today if a bear showed up in my backyard, I'd go in the house. And you know what would happen? I'd call the police, or the bear police, I don't know, the bear patrol perhaps. The bear police, they live inside of my head. No, that's the dream police. Cheap trick. It's a cave. Yes, referencing albums that came out when your parents were children. Things have changed. Did you see last night? It was fun. American debates are fun. It was funny. We got fewer ships than 1916, and Obama said we also have fewer horses and bayonets. And we've got these ships. The military's changed. We've got these ships called aircraft carriers, and planes land on them. And every it's like, oh my god, he's being totally sarcastic. And we got these other ones that go underwater. They're called submarines. If I was Romney at that point, I would have said, look, asshole, stop it. I know, I just made a mistake, but please. I almost felt sorry for Romney there. It was funny. It's hard to feel sorry for anybody in either side of a big election thing like that because they're all pretty powerful people. Either way, if Obama wins, he's still president. If he loses, that was the last job he'll ever have. He'll be set free. He's okay. And Romney can go home and bathe in his money. So everybody turns out okay for them, right? But it was funny. I will say that. So things have changed since 1916, but also since, say, 10,000 BC. All right, so this made a great deal of sense a long time ago to have this kind of system where we can get away. Or be energized to fight. I would call the police. I would go in my house. I'd be a little... But you know what the weird thing would be? I would have a fight or flight response. Right? I'm not some kind of trapper that lives up north. Prospecting for gold. Hey! I talk to my Fess Parker and Cappy Hayes. So I wouldn't know what to do. I knew what I would do. I'd go in the house. Pretty much that I'd be safe from a bear, right? But I'd still have this reaction, and I would be safe, and I would know I was safe. I would know that the bear couldn't figure out the doorknob. I wouldn't be too concerned. Yet, my heart would be beating, my pupils would dilate, physiological resources would be shifted away from my immune system, and getting me ready to fight a bear or run away from a bear. Even though I'm sitting in my house, though, I guess we probably should call the cops. That can't be it. It isn't good for me. Why should I shut down my immune system if I'm completely and utterly safe? Right? So nowadays, this kicks in when you're playing Halo 4 coming November 8th to EB Games. Or, just released this morning, Medal of Honor Warfighter, which I picked up on the way to work. Yeah, I got the pre-order code here. Yeah. I got the extra class of sniper, which I won't use because I can never do the sniping, and I just wander around and people kill me in these games.
So a lot of times, and if you play video games, you know this, you've had this feeling where your stress system kicks in, your mouth gets dry, your pupils are dilated, your heart's beating fast, and you're going, it's a video game! I've had this experience, and especially, the more realistic the games get, the more immersive they get, the worse it gets. Halo's actually not a great example, because Halo, while a great story, I don't find incredibly immersive as a story. I love the story. Look, I cried at the end of Halo 3. Okay? So I love the story. But it's not the same as some of these games. In fact, Medal of Honor, the first one, the one from 2010, is an amazing story. But it's also quite a bit more immersive just because of the way things look. It looks more real, and it's an actual war that's going on. Halo still has a cartoony feel to it that. And that game, Medal of Honor, didn't. And I find that game a lot of times, I feel my heart beating and all that stuff, And unless I've watched a walkthrough, I don't expect, but I hate doing that. I feel like I've cheated when I watch a walkthrough for a video game. I feel like I should go have a shower. Like I've just violated everything. But I've had that feeling of like, and it's like thinking, this is stupid. It's a game. You can actually turn this off. This is even safer than the bear being in the backyard. Right? So a lot of times it's something like this, or it's the person in front of you at the store. When all you want to do today at Max is pick up another package of Fisherman's Friend cough drops. Because you need them. You're now addicted to these instead of something else. And you have cavities because of these freaking cough drops. At least you don't smoke cigarettes. But the person in front of you is clicking the lottery as an investment of some sort. They think it's an RSP. And you're sitting there going, oh, just need, maybe I'll buy more cigarettes instead. Actually, killing that person, so your fight or flight response, which would be exactly to run away from the store, or kill the person and get your cough drops. Not going to solve the problem at all, is it? It's doing nothing, actually. It's doing nothing. I used to get really upset in lines. I don't anymore when I started thinking about this a bit more. Right? Because I can't make the line move any faster, and my stress system kicking in, really all it's going to help me do is kill other people in front of me, which would move me ahead in the line and then take me off to prison. Right? So the thing is, so you might think, say, why do we still have this stress system? Well, actually, first of all, it would take a long time if evolution doesn't turn on a dime. But secondly, there are times that stress will save your life. Right? We got guys on the basketball team, a bunch of you, half the damn team seems to be in this class. You guys know that you get stressed out playing, and you probably get told you to tell yourselves, and you guys, the coach says, calm down, gotta relax a little bit, don't get too wound up, right? Because if you're really nervous and you're shaky, you're not gonna, it's hard to hit those threes from outside. Yeah, see, I know some of the terms. Yeah. They wouldn't see them, they're on the street. So it would be very hard to do if you were playing the sport. Not that I played anything really well, but I did football and I wrestled. And wrestling was worse than football. In wrestling, it's like just one guy against one guy. Immediately, at least for me, my heart would start beating, my mouth would go dry. I wasn't very good at wrestling. I wasn't very good at it. I was just a big kid, but I wasn't very good at it. I will remember, funny thing though, one of the things you do to get a guy to move is you drive his head into the mat, make it uncomfortable enough that he moves. So I'm doing this, and I hear my mom yell, David, don't hurt him! And then my dad yelling, shut up, Leslie. But it's funny, because it will save your life. Right? So it doesn't save your life playing basketball, it doesn't save your life playing video games, but if you are literally in a real fight, yeah, it can save your life. If you are actually in a war, it can save your life. If you're in an accident, it'll save your life. But most of the time, we aren't in wars, in fights, or in accidents. Most of our lives are playing basketball or video games or writing a test. Right? So if you're in a fight or an accident, or even to appoint a test. Why do I mention that? Because a little bit of arousal is a good thing for a test, right? You don't want to be, and you guys probably talk about this again when you play ball, it's, you know, you don't want to be too relaxed, because too relaxed, you're asleep. And too wired, you can't shoot, you can't pass, you can't think. Somewhere in the middle, that optimal level of arousal, right? That, right? The Erkes-Dodson law? What that says is, so this is arousal. This is performance on some task, and this is arousal. And a mid-level of arousal is good. And that's why you want to have a little bit of arousal when you're writing a test, a little bit of anxiousness, a little bit of anxiety. Anxiousness? I think the word's anxiety I'm looking for. But you don't want too much, because then you freak out. Like a woman I saw once who had to be hauled away during a final exam when I was in third year. Paramedics had to come. Third year stats exam. It's the one at Western that we took that if you got less than 70, you couldn't do the honors degree. 400 people in the class, 70 people usually get about 70 or above, so that's who gets to do the honors degree. So she was pretty nervous and she freaked out, and then they had to call the paramedics. And I looked over my friend Pete, and they stopped the exam. They said, we turned their papers over, and they pulled her out on a stretcher, and she was laughing at it. It's really weird. I looked at my friend Pete and said, I thought this only happened on TV. And he said, no, so did I.
It's crazy.
But you don't want to be here either.
Because it's like this. I don't care. Whatever. I'm going to have a nap, part way through the test, you know.
So you want to be somewhere in the middle. So in fact, your stress system, if it's the right level of it, in something like, that isn't life-threatening, is a good thing for performance. So what is stress?
The process by which we appraise and cope with environmental threats and challenges. Yes, that's clearly from some book I read somewhere.
I guess that's as good a definition as any. I don't know. The idea of stress itself, I think, is way overused. It seems to me whenever a medical doctor can't figure out what's wrong with you, they say, well, it must be stress. Right? So you go to the doctor, you say, you got this symptom, this one, and they think about it for a while, and then they ask House, and he puts it up on the big board. He tells some people they're idiots, makes some comment about religion. Then Chase goes to have sex with somebody, and eventually they come back, they have nothing, and someone says, it must be stress. Some of you clearly have watched House, and some of you haven't, and some of you have a smile on your face, and others are like, it was an excellent TV show that was ended last year.
Did he always often brought in evolutionary ideas, by the way, which I also like. My dad once said that I was like House. If I would be an MD, I'd be like House. I said, Dad, that guy's an asshole. He said, have you ever talked to you? No, thanks, Dad, but I think you have a point.
Which was often said, you know, well, it's got to be stress. You don't know what it is, so it's probably stress, you know. So I find that to be a little annoying.
So the idea itself, I think, is overused. I mean, so you have to be careful with when you say that something's caused by stress. So how does this work? Originally, Cannon, you've heard, this is Cannon-Baird theory of emotion you might have heard of. This is that same Cannon. He was the first person to describe the fight or flight response.
He's a physiologist, I think, from Harvard. So we talked about the fight or flight response back in the early 1900s.
Basically, and he didn't know this at the time, but it's basically run or mediated by epinephrine and norepinephrine,
what we call adrenaline and noradrenaline as well. Now, when it goes into it's released into your central nervous system where it's a neurotransmitter, it's released into your bloodstream where it acts as a hormone. Hormones act very similarly to neurotransmitters. There are receptors, they open up ion channels. It's very similar to what you're used to as a psychology student. The big reactions here that are caused by the epinephrine and the norepinephrine are your heart rate going up, your breathing, your rate of breathing increases. This is to get more oxygen in more quickly because you're getting ready to fight for your life or run for your life. Right? Whoops, let's go back.
I should also include your pupils dilate. But this makes sense because you want to be able to see a little bit better.
Now, you can say, why would you always have them dilated? Because more light getting in there makes it a little bit more difficult to see detail. But you're not after detail at this point. You want to see the big picture, I guess you might say. Blood is redirected away from your internal organs and towards your skeletal muscles. Again, so you can fight. So it's bringing more oxygen, more glucose, which gets turned into ATPs, and that's fuel to your muscles. Your immune system is, in essence, shut down for the duration of a stress incident. Because, you see, think about this evolutionarily. If you're running away from a saber-toothed tiger, what's more concerning? Getting rid of this pesky cold? Or dying a horrible bloody death in the mouth of a saber-toothed tiger? Well, I think we want to be able to run away. This is one of the reasons you can probably see it then, that stress is actually really great for you, because what happens, you end up, unless it's necessary because you're in an actual fight or something, what happens is your body stops repairing itself. Right? And rushing away from your internal organs, you stop being hungry. Right? And you will find that after a stress incident, you may suddenly feel very hungry. And that's just a contrast effect very often. It's partially because you've used up a lot of energy. But it may just be a regular stress event where all you've done, I don't know, you had a really tough test, and you were stressed through it. Afterwards, you're suddenly famished hungry, like crazy. And that's just a contrast effect. That's like I was totally ignoring my gut, because my body wasn't paying any attention to it, and now suddenly my body is. Right? But again, this makes complete sense. You don't want to be running from a saber-toothed tiger going, well, maybe I'll turn around and fight it so I can eat it. Probably not a good idea. This was originally found by a Sale. There's a lot of ways to pronounce his name. It's one of the guys, I never heard his name written down. Working at McGill. Don't think originally Canadian, but we can claim him. Look, in the 1930s and 40s, people had started to discover what hormones did, how they worked. And people were just taking hormones and injecting them into rats and seeing, what does this hormone do? What does this hormone do? So he injected rats with hormones, because that's what you did back then. What's your job? I'm a hormone injector. That sounds vaguely dirty. You know? Sounds like it might be the name of some website. He found enlargement of the adrenal cortex. So in other words, it was more adrenaline being produced, more epinephrine. He found shrinkage of the thymus. Shrinkage! Seinfeld reference there. The thymus of the rat, also known as the sweetbread of the rat. No, of course not. It's just in cows. He found ulcers in their stomachs. So he thought, well, this hormone does this. I forget what it was. So he tries another hormone, gets the same results. Tries another hormone, gets the same results. Tries saline, gets the same results. Tries Coca-Cola and purple Kool-Aid. No, he didn't try those. But he tried saline, which should do nothing. And it did that. You know, then he thought, okay, instead of doing that, I'll just shock them. Because it was the 1940s and you shocked rats. It was a thing you did. You would do that perhaps today. He also tried holding the rats over, just up in the air like this, which was going to drop them. Like threatening them. So, yeah, because you mock them like anyway. They get that, rats. They're pretty bright.
So, you're in shock. So it's pretty clear it's not the hormones themselves, it's getting injected. Now think about this.
It's probably stressful to be a rat getting injected by someone who literally weighs 1,000 times your size. Think about this. A guy comes up to you and he's 100 meters tall. And he picks you up with a needle as big as you, and, you know, it's
okay. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
And he shoots you with, you know, saline. Oh, man, I'm going to die. And you can see why the rats would be a little freaked. So he came up with this idea of what he called the general adaptation system, or syndrome. I mean, you hear it called both, because when you have a problem with this, it's often called the syndrome. The first part here is the alarm reaction. This is when your heart rate speeds up and blood rushes to skeletal muscles, like I was talking about. This is when you first recognize a stressor. Now again, in the EEA, us recognizing a stressor might have been a wild animal or a confrontation with another individual. That makes complete sense. We're getting ready to fight or run away. Now, then there's the resistance. This is where you want to stay there. If you can stay in this phase, you're okay. You're okay. So this is where you're at your peak of physical performance. Same thing I'm talking about here. This kind of idea here as well. Now, if you can maintain this for a long time, this is good. And these stress hormones, this is epinephrine and norepinephrine, are released and released and released literally until you don't have any more of them. You can eventually make more. And there's also physical limits here. At some point, we just get exhausted. Right? Where, so you think about what's going to be important for your cardiovascular health, right? So your ability to, like your heart health, that kind of thing. When you literally get to exhaustion, now, your defenses are depleted at this point. You can't do anything. You have no more stress hormones left. But you also got no more energy left. You've used it all to run away or fight. You're pretty damn vulnerable. Remember in Walking with Caveman, that in essence is what they were doing when the guy with that put the alligator tooth in his mouth and his friends were walking, were chasing down that wildebeest where the hell they were fighting or tracking for days and days, just trying to get it exhausted, and it just collapses. Right? And it literally couldn't go on. And they looked like they had it, and the stupid, young, impulsive Heidelberg Institute went after them. And then everything was in trouble. It wasn't good. So lots of this is going to be bad. You know, in fact, cortisol is released here. One of the things it does is it helps speed up the repair process of muscles, okay? This is insidious, the way this system works, because, in fact, cortisol release destroys hippocampal cells. So this is actually getting... Now, look, you can't then tell me, well, I can't write an exam because I might destroy my hippocampus. I don't want to have too much stress. That's a new character from that guy. Talks like that. Give him a name eventually. It would take a lot of this to give you better results, okay? This isn't going to happen after one bad test or one bad basketball game or one horrible day playing a video game. But it could eventually lead to memory loss, which is pretty intense. But it's also going to be bad because your immune system has been shut down. So when we talk about stressful events that could cause the system to kick in, catastrophes, that's fine. They should kick in there. Tsunami. Right? Like they had in Japan, a recent tsunami. I think if we hear there's a giant 30-foot wave coming at us, we should probably be a little concerned. Fight or flight makes sense. Run away. You can't fight the water. Run away. Worse, if you're actually ever, the unfortunate experience to be fighting a war, probably your stress system kicking in is a good thing because you literally are fighting for your life. Right? Earthquakes, these kind of things. Invasion by the Covenant. No one likes these things. Significant life changes
Death, divorce, job loss. By the way, the opposite of these things also are significant life changes and also cause stress. So birth, marriage, and a new job are just as stressful as these here. They really are, and it's hard to believe because they're happy events. But they're just stressful. Moving is a horribly stressful thing if you've ever moved before. It's horrible. Even if it's a wonderful new place and you're so excited, and even if you have packers and unpackers, which is the greatest way to move, by the way. If you ever have to move and you can get your employer to get you packers and unpackers, take that over salary. You know, really take both. Last time we moved back here from Newfoundland. It was great. For I negotiated my moving allowance before I negotiated my salary. It's like, I don't want to pack things ever again. Guys came and packed our stuff. Guys came and unpacked our stuff. We had to leave a note on the garbage. Don't pack the garbage. Because they'll pack it. It was great. Now, not all, how only half our stuff arrived. We didn't have half of it for 2 weeks. But then I kept calling North American Van Lines. And I said, there's a way you can make me stop calling. And she said, how? I said, $500. And then she wrote me a check. So that was good. I was pretty stressed there. I was pretty stressed. But not as bad as I used to be. Now, the big thing here is daily hassles. I hate that term. This is what it's called, these scales. Daily hassles. It's very 70s, right? Are you getting hassled? Man, well, we should rap about it. Back when rap meant talk. It was a hip way to say talk. Coolsville, daddy-o. That's more 50s, really. So, like, things like your neighbors being loud, me, shitty weather, your coffee maker doesn't work properly, or you do. We got one of them Keurig ones at home. I did a great one this morning. I started it, and I forgot to put a cup underneath. Didn't notice while I was in the dishwasher. And you don't notice because you hear it, but you're like trickling down. Like, oh, yeah. And you smell the coffee. And I looked over, I thought I threw the coffee on. And of course, I can't see it because I, look over. I look over at this, and it's like, I really could have sworn I just heard it. And I think I smell coffee, and oh, it's all over the freaking counter. I'm an idiot. I may have laughed at it. And before the therapy I had a few years ago, I would have been putting my fist through a wall. And I mean, and I'm not kidding. So, right, Maddie? I mean, she made some kind of comment behind my back, didn't she? Like, if your team or you watch a sport, I used to get really, I was really invested in sports. Right? And I don't do that. So I like my team to win. I like the teams I hate lose. I don't like that more. But if they lose, I don't get so upset. Right? Or decide I'm not going to watch the game. Right, I'll check the score on Twitter, and then when I find out my team's winning by a mile, I'll tune it in. It's like political debates. It's about like, no, I'm going to watch this. It'll get me too freaked out. I'll find it. And then two-thirds of the way through, I said, I think I know who's winning. Do you want to watch it now? Because the person I was cheering for was winning. Because it's like sports. Sad, but true. So you can actually, if you avoid these things bothering you too much, that's one of the biggest things you can do. Those, of course, and the major life events are hard to deal with, but you have to think your way through them. These are probably the biggest stressors in our lives, and they aren't stressors really at all. Your fight or flight system isn't helping you here at all. It's not helping you in major life changes typically either. It's only helping you in catastrophes. But remember, and you think back to the EEA, none of this stuff was there. Right? Well, I guess maybe your spear broke down. Right? I don't know. There were no teams. Your neighbors were all family, and everybody went to sleep at the same time when it got dark out. Right? Go fire out, go sleep. You know. These seem like nothing, these things, but if you're facing other bad stuff, stressful things, that can really add up. So if you are facing any of the big life things, trying to avoid these things, having them bother you is a big deal. Okay. So, now, The effects of stressors are mediated by perceived control. How much control do you think you have over the situation? Optimists fare better in life than pessimists. And it's interesting because optimists are probably fooling themselves. We have talked about this before. We have talked about how pessimists are probably more realistic, but lying to yourself and being an optimist is probably more healthy. Right? And in fact, there's an evolutionary advantage in being happy and being an optimist. There really is. It's complete crap. The world actually isn't all going to work out all right for everyone. It can't. If it works, you know, if you and me are arguing about something, one of us is going to win and one of us is going to lose, probably. Right? It's not going to work out for both of us. It can't. Maybe we'll be all civilized people and we'll say, well, you know, my favorite, you know, we'll come to compromise. Or my favorite, well, let's just agree to disagree. So you're saying we're never going to resolve this and we're just going to be losers. But optimists do fare better in life. They live longer. Their health is better. They get better jobs, better pay. Now, partially, I think that's the other way around. Like, you know how it's really easy to be optimistic when you're making $190K a year? Right? Or you got an elevator for your car. It's a wrong joke. He has elevators for his car in one of his houses. And I'm not kidding. I can make all the American political jokes I want. It's not my country. You have more stress hormones released when you have less control. And again, this makes a lot of sense. Think about perceived control in terms of, again, in the EA. If you're a man of perceived control, it should be like, whoa, in other words, oh, that's simply tired, versus I, which is, do I try to take his alligator tooth out of his mouth? Well, I could do that or not. Right? So, you can put all this together and talk about some of the effects of long-term stress. Now, this is interesting because Friedman and Roseman got the ball rolling on looking at this a long time ago, back in the 50s. And they found that fat, the amount of fat in people's diet, which may not be a bad thing, though, and cigarette smoking were equal in men and women. Remember, this is the 50s. And they found men got more coronary heart disease than women. In other words, men got more heart attacks than women. Men had higher stress jobs in the 1950s. Right? Just think of all the drinking they had to do. You've seen that, men? No, think about it. I mean, women, again, in the 1950s, were stay-at-home moms almost always. I'm not saying it's not stressful. But it's not the same kind of stress that the guys were under. And the funny thing they found was that accountants were doing just fine until tax time. The most stressful time of the year for an accountant was tax time, April. And then accountants were dying of heart attacks. Okay. That does make, that's intuitively pleasing, unless you're an accountant. Why was that? Well, they came up with this notion that, and I'm going to go through this in a second, but they get this notion of type A personality. The type A personality invented by the man in the middle, my father, the most type A person I have ever met in my life. By the way, this is my there's me and my brother, and there's my dad, and we're deep frying cheesecake. That's what we're doing. And there's a big bottle of gin there. So it's a fun occasion. We literally are deep frying cheesecake. You take cheesecake filling, you put it in tortillas, and you deep fry it. Yeah. It's hard to believe my dad had a heart attack at 53, isn't it? My dad is so type A that he drove himself to the hospital when he had his heart attack. He literally did. He got in his car. He said, I was there. I said to my, he said, what do we have for dinner? My mom said, it was ham. Okay. God, I got a heartburn. Jesus. It's awful. I got a call at 6 o'clock in the morning. We were over at my parents' place. Next, 6 o'clock in the morning. Your dad's in the hospital. They think he had a heart attack. I said, what? She said, remember last night? It was probably then. I'm like, what? Well, did he call an ambulance? No, you know your father. He drove. He drove to the... having a heart attack. That's my father. That's the way the man was. He was pretty driven. Pretty time dependent is a pretty common thing of what they call type A personalities, people that are into deadlines. Now, why do they have more heart disease? This is the question. Because when you look at all some of the things with the type A personality, the idea of being driven, well, there's what they call the type B personality, which is calmer.
There are people that are type B that are very successful and understand deadlines and they work hard and all that stuff.
It could be that they sleep less. But that might be because of the kind of occupations typically type A people have. They tend to smoke more. Not so much anymore. That's not much of an issue anymore because so fewer people smoke now. They, more than anything, it's anger. Or as my mom used to say, flying off the handle. You're just flying off the handle. You're just off the deep end. Right? So the key thing in all of this, probably more than anything, is anger. It's not so much all these other things about the type A personality, the drivenness, the time dependence. It's almost certainly not even really what we call type A personality. It's not that important. It's the idea that people get angry easily. And my dad was really good at getting angry. He didn't have a heart attack, by the way. He had a heart attack by the time he was 53. But he didn't die. He didn't kill him. Brain cancer killed him later. But he got angry easily, and really he was good at it. Like he was really good at getting angry. The number of things I've seen him break on purpose is really pretty impressive. And you know, and the stories are funny later. At the time, it's like. Okay, so we talked about the immune system. We got two cells. This is very general. There's generally two types of cells in the immune system. Beta lymphocytes, they fight off bacteria. And T cells fight off viruses and cancer, very generally. Okay? Now, the thing is, stress, as we've talked about, suppresses the immune system. You're diverting resources to the GAS, right? So you end up with more infections and even more cancer if you're constantly under stress. Right? Which is pretty interesting because, and again, if you're under stress and you get to the exhaustion phase, especially, if you're in good shape, this isn't going to be much of a problem. But if you're not in good shape, things are going to be bad for you. Because you'll hit the exhaustion phase more quickly, more often, and then you can't fight off infection at all. Until your entire GAS reloads, in essence. So, again, in the EEA, this didn't matter. First of all, we were all in pretty good shape back then. Right? You don't think of really kind of lazy fat guy early modern humans. Right? No, you guys go hunting. I'm going to hang out here. Somebody's got to sit here and watch the fire, make sure no one steals it. I'll be here. You guys go ahead and get us some kind of mastodon if you could. Pretty hungry. Those guys, there weren't any fat guys. Okay. Nowadays, different story. So, the thing is, and this is just sort of an aside, Only the healthy, the whole sort of healthy thing. And I'm not going to preach to you. I don't care what you do to your body. It's not mine. The whole healthy lifestyle thing, you can't just do parts of it. Like, you can't say, well, you can't, like, drink and smoke and do crack and have unprotected sex with hookers from Haiti. But say, well, this is where AIDS comes from originally, is Haiti. Some of you got that. Was it anything bad about Haiti, per se? Say, yeah, but I got a positive outlook on life, and I'm an optimist. So everything will be fine. No, that doesn't work that way. So it's only one part of the puzzle, right? We've got to keep that in mind. So health psychologists and others are also interested, as I said, in promoting health. Why people go to the doctor, which I talked about. So that's something a health psychologist do. You hear more about these guys as health psychologists. And a lot of respects, that's your reaction to stress. Again, it's a stressful thing. Some people, in psychology, one of the things we talk about in personality is a continuum between repressors and sensitizers. The repression and sensitization sort of continuum. And there are people that are repressors. Those are the people that never want to know anything and they just bottle it up, right? And there's the sensitizers, you know these guys? These are people that, like, before they go to the doctor, they read every article they can on WebMD and Wikipedia. And they come in and say, so are you going to do the acronym? And there's most of us that live somewhere in the middle. But it is a stressful experience, not being, feeling like something bad's happening to you. So one of the key things that health psychologists promote is aerobic exercise. This seems to help you stay in the resistance phase longer. Now, back in the EEA, we got a lot of aerobic exercise. We were hunter-gatherers. We were nomadic people, all of us. So we walked around, by definition. Again, there was nobody lying around saying, well, I'm going to hang out here. But you guys go on ahead. I'll catch up.
So they had less exhaustion, and of course, so do we.
But we don't. We have the problem of we have to actually go exercise. Right? The number of people I see that come up to my office on the fifth floor, and when they get to my office, they're panting. And then they're like 18-year-old women. They sound like my grandfather had seen them smoking 3 packs of cigarettes a day.
Well, your office is so...
You're 18. I'm 47, it doesn't happen. I mean, I'm no paragon of health. Walk up the freaking stairs. You never want to say that to someone on an elevator, though, because, like, you know, you get on the elevator, and there's a person who just got on, and, like, you're on the first floor, and they're just going to the second floor, but they're ahead of you, so you don't know. And it turns out they've got a... Like, one leg is 5 feet shorter than the other, and you didn't notice. And you make some horrible comment about you lazy bastard, and they go, well, I'm perfect. You know, and you feel like... So don't make a comment, is what I'm saying. Because you feel really bad when you do that. Makes you a bad person.
All right. One of the things we have a body weight set point, right? And this is not just us, this is most animals.
So... Your body is set to have a certain weight. You might be huge, you might not be, but it's set to have a certain weight. And and this is why it's very hard to lose weight. This was great back in the EEA, because, like, if you didn't eat enough, or you didn't have enough food, you had stored fat, and your body would use that. If you ate too much, your body would store it as fat. And it's like, I'm supposed to weigh this much, whatever it may be, 180 pounds or whatever you want to do, kilos, 75 kilos, whatever. See, you can convince your body a lot more to change its set point by not only just dieting, like changing what you eat, but also exercising, because then your body learns that it has to be ready to do more exercise, right? So instead of being sedentary. Oh, you can lose weight by not eating at all.
Sure. You can. It's not going to be, but it won't last as long. Oh, by the way, this is something I just wanted to mention this. You can't burn off fat. You hear people say that. Feel the burn! No, no one feels any burn. Nothing burns. You're not burning anything. Okay? Turn fat into... You just hear this crap. I know you probably all know that, but there's certain... The whole health promotion industry pisses me off. Pink lunged health kaida. So there's been a lot of people talking about this in the last maybe 20 years, 15, 20 years, talking about a paleolithic approach. In other words, sort of, you hear people talk about the paleo diet? Okay? And I've got quite a bit of sympathy for this. This is the idea that we should live the way we did as hunter-gatherers. Not live that way. It doesn't say throw out all your stuff and don't play video games and don't have cars. It doesn't say just have wear skins. It doesn't say, you know, poop on the floor. So it's not being that literal, but it's talking about lifestyle choices. The question is, so it's about, a lot of it's about diet. Was our diet all vegetarian? We're pretty sure that's not true. You will hear people say, especially people that are vegetarians, they will tell you that, you know, it's somehow more natural and better for you just to eat vegetables. Well, if you want to do that for, if it's a religious thing perhaps, or some sort of belief system thing, that's cool. But, you know, we're actually built to eat meat as well. And in fact, one of the reasons that we are us was our ability to get food, as Bassan walked with cavemen, was our ability to crack open bones and eat marrow. Delicious, delicious bone marrow. Bone marrow is very, very good if you've never eaten bone marrow. It's a very wonderful thing. Even if you got a steak and it's that little piece of marrow, you just, ugh. Good. Also, it makes me connect with my you know, caveman ancestors. I ate some bone marrow. You feel like, yeah. Now I know what it was like, except that they were never sitting in restaurants like this. I didn't have to chase this down and kill it. I just had to talk to a waiter. It's a little different. Was it all meat? I don't think, an all meat diet either. Some people, yeah, it was. The you know what? There's not a lot of vegetable options on the Eskimo buffet, right? You go up to the tundra. They know people aren't like, I wish we had, you know, nothing they could do. They couldn't grow stuff because they had walrus, seal, whale, all that stuff. That's great, but there's nothing they could do about it. They couldn't do like what the native people did here, which was they farmed here, right? So you get corn and squash and all that great stuff. They could do that here, because you could grow this stuff around here. What are they going to do? Set up hydroponics? Right? A grow-up of some sort? Like Baffin Island? No, of course not. Right? So their diet is almost completely meat. The Inuit people. The people in this part of the world, pretty much a mix of meat and vegetables. So it really depended on, and fruits, it really depended on where you were, and of course nuts. So it's neither all meat or all vegetable. Though you can live both of these ways. And as long as you are careful, you could literally be a meatitarian. Right? And I would be happy to live that way. I could live on nothing but meat. Well, no, you can't like make bacon coffee. Trouble there. It's not so much what was eaten, it was that it was less, the caloric density was less. That, you know, for sure. Doesn't matter if you're eating walrus or you're eating squash or you're eating cassava in Africa. Doesn't matter. The caloric density is less than it is now. Because food wasn't as processed as it is now. And this is why the idea of the Paleolithic diet is basically eating, it's not eating it's not the same recipes they used to use, we don't know any recipes that Homo erectus was using. But secondly, it's not just like
kill food, put on fire, wait.
You know, so there's nothing about seasoning things and all that stuff, but it's about if you're going to eat meat, you eat meat, you don't eat pre-processed chicken parts. You eat chicken, fine, eat chicken. You don't eat chicken nuggets.
And you don't put a coating on them of flour, for example. Right? So if you're going to make, say, fried chicken, you wouldn't put flour on it, white flour. You wouldn't put any flour on things. In fact,
considering we weren't eating grains in very large levels, look, when we started living in towns, we started growing grain. It was the first thing we did so we could make beer. Right? As some of you know, that I mean, it seems pretty clear now that the reason we stopped, people around the Tigris and Euphrates, the reason they stopped being hunter-gatherers is that they started to grow grain to make beer, to make bread.
Bread was we could also make bread with this. Great.
But they started growing grain. We didn't eat grain like we do now. In the Paleolithic times,
we weren't eating grain. So one of the things about this sort of Paleolithic diet is a complete lack of eating grains. So you might hear things about whole grains and all that stuff, and I'm not going to, do whatever you want. All I'm saying is if you do want to live like these people did, and you think that it's more healthy because our body evolved in that setting, you don't eat grain. There's no bread, there's no pasta. Okay? I know a friend of mine, Chris, is a experimental psychologist in Alberta. He follows this diet pretty religiously. And he uses a lot of like almond flour, things like that. So, you know, you can certainly eat stuff like that. Right? But you're not eating processed food. You're not eating any processed sugar. Basically, you've taken processed carbohydrates out of your diet. And if you do just take, a lot of, not all carbohydrates, by the way. So you eat vegetables, no problem. Just not processed stuff. If you do this, you actually lose weight, by the way. It's amazing. And you can eat as much as you want eating that diet. It's basically a low-carbohydrate diet and very low caloric density. So you get full pretty quickly. Right?
And you can eat as much fat as you want. Problem is, you can't drink beer. You drink grain alcohol. It's not got no carbohydrates in it. You're not supposed to. But you can. See, we couldn't get fat and sugar in the mass quantities we can get it today.
We couldn't get it in the mass quantities we can get it today 50 years ago, 60 years ago. I should say that. Probably more like 70 years ago, before World War II. We couldn't get massive amounts of sugar. We couldn't get great big things of carbohydrates, big things of white flour. It was expensive. It wasn't available. And there wasn't processed food. The most processed anything was white flour. That's pretty much it.
Now, carbohydrates, when we used to be able to, and sugars in general, and also carbohydrates, we couldn't get them back in the EEA, but we love them because it's sugar, it's immediate energy. So we enjoy the flavors, right? And fat we also need. Our brain's made out of, it's a pretty fatty thing. Myelin is made out of fat, for example. And fat is pre-stored energy. Sugar's instant energy, fat is pre-stored energy. Beautiful. We should really like that. And then we should like it in its combination, which is nature's perfect food, icing. Right? Think about it. It's fat and sugar. It's just like nature's perfect food. Why do we love that? Because it's got the two things we like the most, but we couldn't get them in that. You didn't used to be able to go out and buy just a tub of icing. Right? Or ice cream. Can't have ice cream in the house. To me, it's like heroin. I just eat it all. Are you eating the ice cream? No. It's spoon in my mouth. So it's something to think about. I'm pretty sure we know it's neither of these, all meat or all vegetable, but but it's the caloric density and it's the lack of processed carbohydrates more than anything. That's the big difference between our diet now and our diet then. Right? Questions about that? Well, we could just accept some people. There's an advantage to accepting if you're, say, obese. Right? Now, they keep changing what the word obese means. When I was a kid, it meant Guinness Book of Records level. Those two guys on the scooters, world's fattest twins. You ever seen that picture of those guys? Yeah. That, to me, was obese. Now it's like, well, you're 20 pounds overweight. You're clearly obese. So, I don't know. People that actually accept who they are have a lot less stress in their lives, and there's something to be said for that. The disadvantage is you're still overweight, and that still isn't very good for you. Right? Because when you're overweight, one of the biggest problems, of course, is that your cardiovascular health isn't very good. And we talked about how important that is all day today. Seems to me that much of the publicity on this stuff is really poorly done, though. Right? Just like it is on so many other things, it's people that think that they're better than you talking down you. You shouldn't eat so much of that. You are worse than Hitler. Right? So I think the way to this is just me, but I think the way to do this is to explain to people that they should accept who they are and try to eat a better diet, but that they should, if we shifted people over, instead of saying, well, now we'll take you to a completely low-fat diet that no one will eat, right? In the early 90s, the big fad was low-fat diets. And they were things that no one would eat. My dad, after he had his heart attack in 1985, he was on this diet that was hardly any fat a day, like it was really, really low. He lost a lot of weight very quickly. But he was also in a bad mood all the time. Now, he did go from being a guy that would buy, you know, danishes and fry them in butter, which, by the way, is delicious, just want to let you know. So he did eat a lot of that. But going from that to, like, you can have 30 milligrams of fat a day or some ridiculous number, 30 grams, whatever it was, could have been 30 milligrams. That seems a little low. It's ridiculous. And also, that's not how we live. Why don't we move over, instead of this, you are a horrible person because you weigh a little bit too much, why don't we go over to, you know what might be healthier for you? Eat. Don't eat processed food. Eat real food. And by the way, real food includes butter and olive oil, delicious things like that. And honey and meat, big hunks of pork and beef. I like big hunks of pork and beef. It's my favorite food. Dead animal flesh is delicious. Or if you want to eat vegetables, that's great. But there's nothing wrong with eating avocados, which are basically butter in vegetable form. I mean, that's what they are. My friend Chris, as an example, and there's other data on this, I'm just using him as an example. I don't use anecdotes typically, but this is interesting because my friend Chris has MS. So he has to always test his blood chemistry. And he posts it on Facebook when he does it. And he eats like this. And he eats pretty well, but he's eating huge amounts of fat. He cooks in coconut oil and palm oil. And his cholesterol is like low, his bad cholesterol. Because you see, your body's made to deal with this crap, with fats that are not... The worst thing you can eat is like margarine. It's like the worst thing in the world.
Hydrogenated soybean oil, things like that. Eat real food. And that's what people should be told to do. They shouldn't be told something unrealistic like you can never eat fat again. And actually, those kind of diets have gone away. But the sad thing is that the Canadian Heart Association, for example, still puts their Heart Smart label on what they call, you know, light items. And then when you look, yeah, they're taking the fat out. You know what they do to increase the flavor? They add tons and tons of sugar and complex carbohydrates, which are probably worse for you than the fat that was in them. And you remember all the you don't remember trans fats? Remember how trans fats are bad, by the way. No doubt about that. No doubt about that. You know why trans fats were brought in? Because all the people that were telling you how to live your life thought that tropical oils like coconut oil and palm oil were bad for you, and they had them removed because they're horrible. We're all going to die. And then the industry said, okay, I guess we could try these trans fats. Good, they're good for you. 10 years later, those are horrible. You eat those, if you give your children Oreos, we should put you in jail. That's my shrill health activist voice. So go back to eating the what we're supposed to eat. And I'm not saying I'm guilty as anybody of eating some crap. There's no doubt about that. Right? But I try to eat real food a lot more than I eat processed stuff, especially processed carbohydrate stuff. Yeah, so.
Instead of going out to McDonald's and feeding your kid a little this or that, why don't you just make
a hamburger? Yeah. Now, if you want to go back to the whole paleo idea, you make the hamburger, you don't give them a bun. And you don't put any ketchup on it, because it's full of sugar, it's full of just... Yeah, oh yeah, and don't misunderstand me. I mean, I would never stop eating bread, except like for hamburger buns. Maybe crumpets in the morning. The odd pancake. I can probably get rid of eating... The only carbohydrate... Complex carbohydrate that I remember, I went on the Atkins diet once, which is not unlike that, but it's a little bit different. I lost 12 pounds in 7 days eating nothing but butter and meat, which is awesome, by the way. It's like, oh no, I'm on a diet, I got to eat more crab. First night we were on it, my wife said, what's for dinner? And I said, great big thick pork chops. And she said, oh, what's, and she doesn't like pork chops very much. She said, what's the side? I said, crab claws. What's for dessert? Whipped cream. Well, we're going to put unsweetened chocolate in it and NutraSweet. It'll be awesome. And it was. And that night, I just drank gin and tonic that didn't have any sweetener in it. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to diet. I can't have chips. They've got carbohydrates in it, but I can't take this pepperoni slice of very thin and deep fried. Those made great chips. I did, and they were awesome. And I'm losing weight. It's like, no, this is for my health. So that's the weird thing. You actually can lose weight doing that. But yeah, the only thing with me, the problem I had was I would after 12 days, I wanted to hunt down anyone that would give me rice. Because I eat a lot. I like rice. I really, really like rice. And I was like, and that's where I broke. But I could live like that. That's no problem. Other people I know would have trouble living with zero carbohydrate kind of thing like Atkins. But you don't have to do that. What you do is you can just eat natural food. You'll be fine. Yeah. You know. And the odd time, it's not going to hurt you. It's like moderation as well, you know. But yeah, don't, you know. And I'm not going to make fun of McDonald's because I actually like McDonald's. I just don't think of those as hamburgers. They're McDonald's hamburgers. It's a whole different food. It's a whole different food. Some conclusions about this. Stress is good. Stress is good because it saves your life in a fight or when you got to run away. Also, it can kill you. Right? Too much of it when you aren't in decent shape, cardiovascular shape, or you have a lousy diet, probably both, it will kill you. And finally, your mom really was right about almost everything. When your mom used to give you advice like this, she was totally telling the truth. Right? It's like when your mom said to you, no, you're not old enough to have coffee. And it turns out she probably didn't know this, you know, the half-life of caffeine is so long, but she was right. When she's telling you to calm down and not smoke and not do drugs, unless you got a cool mom. Just kidding. No, it's not. It's not a cool mom. It turns out that what we thought was a cool parent when we were 12 is really a bad parent. Yeah, yeah. Your mom was probably right about most of this stuff. So a lot of this is... But again, evolutionarily, it makes a great deal of sense. Great deal of sense. Questions about the stuff? All right, thanks, guys.
podcast is released under a Creative Commons copyright, Sharealike 2.5 Canada. Feel free to redistribute the information as you see fit, but please don't make any money out of it. And if you do, you got to tell me, because I'm reserving that right. Giving up all the other ones, including mash it up any way you want, okay? Also, of course, give me attribution. If you want to get a hold of me, my email address is dave.brodbeck, B-R-O-D-B-E-C-K, at algomau.ca. My website is people.auc.ca/broadbeck/blog. Most of the music, all the music's PodSafe, and most of it comes from GarageBand.com or the PodSafe Music Network. See you next time.